Please remain standing
as we read today's scriptures.
This one, Isaiah 52, verse 7 to 15. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who publishes peace, who brings good news of happiness, who publishes salvation, who says to Zion, your God reigns. The voice of your watchmen, they lift up their voices, the voice. Together they sing for joy. For eye to eye they see the return of the Lord to Zion. Break forth together into singing. You waste places of Jerusalem. For the Lord has comforted his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. The Lord has bared his holy arm before the eyes of all the nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God. Depart, depart, go out from there, touch no unclean thing. Go out from the midst of her, purify yourselves, you who bear the vessels of the Lord. For you shall not go out in haste, and you shall not go in flight. For the Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your real God. He was pierced for our transgressions. Behold, my servant shall act wisely. He shall be high and lifted up, and shall be exalted. As many were astonished at you, his appearance was so marred beyond human semblance, and his form beyond that of children of mankind. So shall he sprinkle many nations. Kings shall shut their mouths because of him. For that which has not been told them, they see, and that which have not heard, they understand. Please be seated, and may the Lord bless the reading of his word. Today we are really glad that we have our senior pastor, Pastor Henry, to preach to us. Pastor Henry.
Good morning. Isaiah is the most frequently quoted Old Testament prophet by the New Testament. Biblical scholars were able to find over 400 New Testament usage of Isaiah, including direct quotation, paraphrasing, and allusions. No wonder many biblical scholars even today spend so much time studying the content of Isaiah's message. Today's sermon, I use the good news according to Isaiah. Now, I almost wanted to use the gospel, the word gospel, the gospel according to Isaiah. But, you know, I know that title will be a little bit controversial because every time we think about gospel, we say the gospel according to John, the gospel according to Mark, the gospel according to Matthew, the gospel according to Luke. The good news according to Isaiah. Many scholars spend so much time studying. For example, in Isaiah chapter 7, verse 14, a virgin shall conceive. When I was in seminary, we had to read so many papers, and then there's long paper. I mean, these people, these scholars, they really know how to write. One word, one Hebrew word, they're able to write paper like 10 page long, 15 page long, in publication. Is that Hebrew word strictly used to mean virgin? Or it has a broader range of meaning? But you know that any linguistic study always says that a word, an ancient word, may have more than just one single usage. So some scholars say, no, that word shouldn't be understood as virgin. It can also mean a young woman. Now today, we're going to study Isaiah's message. But then you will be surprised that today's message actually begins, the good news actually begins with his feet. Actually begins with his feet. Because, verse 7, how beautiful upon the mountains are the feet. He's talking about his beautiful feet. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news. Today's passage asks us to look at Isaiah's feet first. The messenger's feet first. Why? Well, let's look. First of all, let's look where his feet had been. Let's trace his footstep. May I have Isaiah chapter 7, verse 1 to 2 shown on the screen? Okay. I'm going to read Isaiah 7, verse 1 to 2. In the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, son of Uzziah, king of Judah, Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, the king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to wage war against it, but could not yet mount an attack against it. When the house of David was told Syria is in league with Ephraim, the heart of Ahaz and the heart of his people shook as the trees of the forest shake before the wind. Now let's pause and think about this particular event. You will say, how in the world can this happen? Because we know that Israel, even though after Solomon, the Israel nation was broken up into two pieces, the northern kingdom Israel and the southern kingdom Judah, but they are still brothers. Why would brother fight against brother? Not only that, why would brother form a coalition with, in this case, Aaron? Now, Aaron is the modern-day Syria. Now the focal point of many, many international politics. Aaron was constantly fighting with Israel. For example, I'm just going to read to you the biblical mention, the biblical account of the battle, the war between Israel and Aaron, or we read Syria. 1 Kings chapter 11, 1 Kings chapter 15, 1 Kings 20, chapter 20, chapter 22, 2 Kings chapter 5, chapter 6, chapter 8, chapter 9, chapter 12, chapter 13, and so on. You got the picture. They were constantly fighting against each other. And today, they form a coalition and they bring the army to Judah. Why? Well, because Aaron's neighbor, the east side neighbor, began to become strong, the Assyria, modern-day Iraq. Assyria became stronger and stronger and started flexing its muscle, started moving westward to threaten Aaron. So Aaron said, okay, I better not fight with my southern neighbor Israel. We better form a coalition against Assyria. So they decided to do that, and then, the more the better. So they said, let's also go ask Judah to cooperate with us. But for some reason, Judah refused. Now you have to understand that thousands of years ago, when a nation doesn't like the other nation, they have no option for economic sanction. They simply have no option to do that. The only sanction available is what? Military sanction. So they decided that, okay, let's better threaten Judah to join us. And this is how this event came about. This is how brother form alliance with enemy to fight brother. May I have Isaiah chapter 7, verse 3 to 4 on the screen? All right. And the Lord said to Isaiah, go out to meet Ahaz, you and the Shear Jashub, your son, at the end of the conduit of the upper pool on the highway to the washer's field and said to him, "Be careful, be quiet, do not fear. And do not let your heart be faint because of these two smothering stumps of firebrands. At the fierce angle of Rezin and Syria and the son of Remaliah." This is the footstep of Isaiah, and even including his son. Isn't that beautiful? When you are trapped, when you are in distress, when you are fearful, isn't it beautiful that someone will bring the good news, comforting news, encouragement, assurance? I mean, you're holding your great report. I mean, what kind of footstep you would like to hear your parents approaching the room, reading the report, and I mean, what would you like to hear? 3.9? Oh my goodness, you have no future. You have no future. How can you bring home 3.9? Or, you know, having a good GPA is only one factor for you to succeed in the future. You know, son, daughter, develop your EQ. You may have a bad IQ, but develop your EQ. That will be fine. I mean, which footstep you would like to have? Isn't it beautiful that Isaiah would say, "Do not be afraid"? Comforting word. Beautiful feet. Yep. But word is just word, isn't it? I mean, there's so many empty words on there right now. There are even words who say that, you know what? I will finish building the electrical fence between Mexico and United States, and I'm going to make Mexico pay for it. Have you ever heard that word? There's so much empty word out there, right? So we need something more substantial, don't we? Isaiah chapter 7, verse 10 to 12. May you have the slide? Again, the Lord spoke to Ahaz. "Ask the sign of the Lord your God. Let it be deep as Sheol or high as heaven." But Ahaz said, "I will not ask, and I will not put the Lord to the test." Not only word, Isaiah offered a sign, a token. Now, I mean, we Christians all know that we got to have faith, right? Christian, once you're baptized, you have this edification class, whatever. You know, we've been taught that we have to have faith in God, so we better not ask some weird sign. Just believe in Him. In this case, Isaiah, inspired by the God's Spirit, said, God is willing to offer you a sign. Any sign, as deep as hell or as high as heaven, anything you ask in between. And Ahaz said, "I will not ask a sign. I will not test my Lord Yahweh." Wow. And then you will read in verse 13, Isaiah's word. "Isn't it enough that you test the patience of men? You are now testing the patience of the Lord." Instead of getting a word of approval, you are testing the patience of your Lord Yahweh. Do you know why? Because Ahaz not asking a sign is not because he believes, because he already had the solution. He already knows what to do. You go home and read 2 Kings chapter 16. You will find out Ahaz already knew the solution. He already went to the Assyrian king and said, "Why don't you send an army for relief?" This is the picture. Can you detect the utter absurdity of this whole picture? I mean, the problem started with the Assyrian is beginning to be aggressive. The source of the problem is the aggression of the Assyrian king. And now Ahaz thinks that the solution is inviting him to be even more aggressive. Can you think about that? Adding fuel to fire. In other words, he rejected the beautiful feet of Isaiah. Now, when I think about this historical event, I think this Isaiah 52 about the good messenger's feet being beautiful is the perfect way to describe it. Because every time you think about something that needs to use the adjective beautiful, it conveys a sense of elegance. Why wouldn't it say how forceful, how powerful upon the mountain are the feet of the one who brings good news? Why would we use beautiful? Because that conveys a sense that you need to appreciate it, but you're not going to be forced by it. It is beautiful, but not forceful. It is ever inviting, but never intruding. Always appealing, but never manipulating. Attractive, but not compulsive. This is the messenger's feet. This is the one who brings the word of comfort. This is the one who offers redemption. This is the one who promised deliverance. How beautiful upon the mountain are the feet of him who brings good news, who published salvation, who declared deliverance. Because as we read how the historical event developed, you will find out that Ahaz had to pay heavy tribute to the Assyrian king. This is in, again, 2 Kings chapter 16. He even had to strip down all the precious metals in the temple dedicated to Yahweh. He had to pay heavy tribute to the Assyrian king, Tiglath-Pileser. Sounds like a fancy beer, doesn't it? Tiglath-Pileser. Not only that, the Assyrian king is not satisfied with having been paid only. You read, continue in 2 Kings. Assyrian swallowed Aaron and then sent the army further south, destroyed Israel, brought Israel people into exile, brought a lot of non-Israel into the northern kingdom to occupy. Not only that, as people said, you don't let the shark smell the blood, because the shark is not just going to be satisfied with smelling the blood, they will go for the kill. Ahaz's son, King Hezekiah, when he became king, the Assyrian also had another king, Tiglath-Pileser's son. He sent an army now to Judah, surrounded Jerusalem. They even had messenger calling out in Hebrew, calling out and then threatened to destroy the entire city. The Judah king had to plead with the Assyrian, don't speak Hebrew, because our people will understand. Was the messenger's feet still beautiful? Yes. If you read 2 Kings chapter 18, you will find out that Isaiah again went to the king of Judah and declared the Lord's salvation, redemption, and deliverance. And this time, the king of Judah believed. Some kind of a plague came upon the Assyrian camp, so they had to withdraw the entire army. Now, you would think now everything is fine now. But read on. 2 Kings chapter 20. This time, the eastern neighbor of Assyria began to have an upcoming star, the Babylon. In 2 Kings chapter 20, king of Judah formed alliance with the Babylonian. Again, inviting an aggressor to be even more aggressive. Planted a seed for the final destruction of even the southern kingdom, Judah. So, the beautiful feet of the messenger, wasted? In vain? Well, now, I look down at my feet. I don't know what kind of shape of your feet is. Big, small, fatty, bony, wide, narrow, thick, thin. I don't know. But let me tell you, human beings' feet are indeed good looking, no matter what shape it is. Because you know why? Go home and try it. Look at your feet and try it. No matter how hard you try, your 5-toe on your foot is not going to spread out like this. I mean, try. Just try very hard. Spread out your toe. They just won't. Basically, no matter how hard you try, all your toe are pretty much in parallel, pointing at the same direction. In other words, every time I look down my foot, I can immediately see two aspects. Where my foot had been, and then where my foot is pointing. And that's the second aspect of how beautiful upon the mountain are the feet of him who bring good news. Isaiah's feet also has a forward-pointing aspect. Not only we trace his footstep and found it beautiful, but also we found that as his foot continued to point forward, remained beautiful. That's why today's passage, when we read chapter 52, verse 7 to 15, you will read the statement. This is in verse 11. Depart, depart, go out from there. Touch no unclean thing. This is prophesying something happened 200 years from that time. When Babylon fell into no longer an empire, at that particular point is the Persian is the ruling power now. King of Persia decided that Jewish people can return to their homeland. This is the return of Jewish people. You can depart from that. And you don't have to go in haste. You don't have to go in flight. This is referring to Exodus. When Jews came out of Egypt, they had to go very fast. Even when they partake the Passover, they have to take it in a very hasty fashion because Egyptian is chasing them. But this time you don't have to do that. King of Persia will let you go. They will let you go at ease. How beautiful upon the mountain are the foot who brings good news. Not only forward pointing, but also this is how beautiful upon the mountains. There is this sense of going up, ascending, ever higher and higher, closer and closer to the mountain top. And you read on, you find indeed, chapter 52, verse 13, behold my servant, after prophesying something that will happen 200 years from his time. first opened this prophecy about a servant. Behold my servant. You will read on, you will find out that until chapter 53, Isaiah in verse 12, describing this servant being pulled to be slaughtered like a lamb. The righteous servant of Yahweh, the Lamb of God. The one that we celebrate in the season of Advent. Yahweh grants people the good news, declares salvation, peace, deliverance. For Isaiah, the good news, including the return of exile 200 years from his time, including the appearance of this righteous servant. So we are at the mountaintop now. We are the believer of this Messiah. But how can the mountaintop experience be just like this? Several years ago, there's a family who suffered a terrible tragedy. An unexpected illness took their only child, teenager child. Among their friends, there is Rutgers Christian members. Called me and said, they have this friend who suffered this terrible blow. And said, Pastor Chan, would you go and minister to them? Their son, they're thinking about having a pastor to officiate a funeral for their son. Because their son attended our church youth program maybe a couple months. I said, now, my limited pastoral experience tell me that in this kind of situation, a lot of time, grief, sadness, doubt, and even anger often cloud people's heart and mind more than anything else. So for this member trying to tell me this is an opportunity to minister to this family, I actually feel that this is a tough call. But out of obligation, being a pastor, I went. I told the parents, I said, okay, I will be willing to conduct the funeral. But I'm going to tell you what I have to say. I have to say that this young man attended church, youth group, you know, a couple months and so on. We don't know what his thought is. I couldn't declare he's in heaven. I couldn't. But I still will be able to convey a certain sense of a possible hope. And the father said, that's fine. The thing is, I was surprised that the parents, especially the father, had enough space in his heart to respond to my invitation for them to come to Rutgers Church. So a couple weeks after the funeral, they show up. This is when we still had the Saturday service. Show up a Saturday evening. They began to come in to Rutgers Church to attend worship service. A year later, one day he called me and he said, I have decided to believe in Jesus. I said, great. He said, but can this evening you lead me for the confessional prayer? I said, you already believe? He said, yeah, but I want you to say the prayer with me. I'll follow you. Because in the evangelist choir, that's how people does it, right? I said, okay, fine. So he gave me the honor to pray this confession of Jesus as Lord with him. 4 months later, he was baptized. That evening, this man, his face was beaming with joy. He couldn't even have his mouth closed. He was smiling. I look at his face, and then one question slowly climbed up in my mind. How long will this smile last? Few months? Few weeks? Now, if you ask, wow, Pastor, how can you have this question in your heart? You are the one who preached gospel to him. You are the one who told him hope. You are the one who said deliverance, redemption. Yes. As soon as that question came up in my mind, I hated myself to have that question. But can I help it? Can I help it not asking? Can I help not remembering? Not remembering 1979 in that beautiful fall season, Austin, Texas, after that Sunday evening when I finally came to Jesus. Monday morning I woke up, sun, moonlight, star, trees, everything was beautiful. Even including the annoying lab maid in my lab was beautiful. I remembered. But can I help not remembering the fading? Because how beautiful upon the mountain are the feet of him who brings good news. Still pointing forward. Still ascending. Still pointing upward, ever higher and higher and higher. Isn't the communion the same way? On that evening, on that specific evening, take, eat. This is my body. Take, drink. This is my blood. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news. Those command, take, eat, and drink. That was a good night. The disciples were able to enjoy a good supper with their good master, good teacher, the rabbi, good friend, miracle performer, wonderful man. That was good. How beautiful upon the mountain are the feet of him who bring good news. But it's still pointing forward. Pointing to just a few days later. His body broken. Blood and water flow out from the wound. And then since that day, disciples are told to look back. But also continue to point forward and ever, ever ascending and upward. For very, verily I tell you, I will not drink this cup until the day I drink it anew in my Father's kingdom.